Hi, I'm Ann Strainchamps, and this is a To the Best of Our Knowledge podcast extra. Remember this. She's everything I need. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. In the mid-80s, heavy metal ruled, and the band Winger topped the charts. Kip Winger, the band's leader, was a teen icon with long hair, skin-tight pants, and a gleaming smile. That was before grunge wiped heavy metal off the musical landscape and Winger became a laughingstock on Beavis and Butthead. Well, today, Kip Winger is back on top of the charts, the classical charts. This is an orchestral piece off Kip Winger's new classical CD, Conversations with Nijinsky. It debuted at number one on iTunes. The music's performed by the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra. And right now, a lot of old metal fans are probably thinking, Kip Winger? Ballet?
So I started taking ballet at 16 because a girlfriend of mine wanted to take ballet, but none of her girlfriends would take it with her. And I love an adventure, so, you know, let's try it. And I got into the ballet studio, and here comes Stravinsky and Ravel and Debussy and Tchaikovsky, and I'm looking at these people jumping around doing these amazing athletic things, really.
Did you like it?
I took it like a duck to water. I was like, this is me. I'm home. This is totally where I belong.
I read you were a soloist with the Colorado State Ballet.
Well, like in the late 70s, there's not a lot of guys in ballet, you know, so they recruited me into the company, and I became a soloist in the company. And had my training started earlier and I had better training, I probably could have done it for a career.
That's funny because I was just having read that in the liner notes for this CD, I then looked back at some of the classic Winger music videos, and it hadn't really hit me before, but, you know, you're doing moves that, I don't know if they qualify quite as pirouettes.
It's all ballet. It's all ballet. I was the Peter Pan of rock. You know, double pirouette to the knee, kick my leg over. Every time I go across the floor, I'm doing, you know, a certain wall step.
Did your fans or even your bandmates know that?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of girls come up to me and say, you took ballet, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah, I did.
But seriously, wouldn't that have ruined your cred?
It totally ruined my cred. Well, look what happened. I mean, I became the geek on Beavis and Butthead, you know. And
For being too pretty?
I don't know. I mean, it was just one of those things where, like, the rock guys, no, that's not cool, man. You know, they didn't think it was cool because you had to stand there in a leather jacket with a chain and...
Now, did you ever have managers or even bandmates come to you and say, could you
tone it down?
Did they say that?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, they totally did.
I wanted to ask you about the first piece on the classical CD, Conversations with Nijinsky. There are both some really hard-driving, big pieces with some dissonance in sections, and then there's some sections which are so delicate, so lyrical and graceful.
Yeah, thank you. When I started listening to rock, with orchestral music, I kept trying to find somebody who can make the orchestra rock. Very hard to find. There's a couple composers that can do it.
Who?
Well, I was in Amsterdam. When I travel, especially in Europe, and I have a day off, I always try to go see the symphony of the city. And in Amsterdam is one of the best in the world. So I went to see a program, and there was a piece at the end of the program when I was going to leave because I didn't know the composer named Honegger. Who's this Honegger? I don't know. Maybe I'll leave. Maybe I'll stay. So I stay, and here comes the third symphony by Honegger, and it just blew me away. And that was the first time I heard in the first movement somebody who could make the orchestra sound like a heavy metal band. And it was like this sound. I was like, this is what I've been looking for.
But are there sections in the on the CD where you feel like, there, I did it, I've got the orchestra sounding like a heavy metal band?
In the first movement of Nijinsky, it is a heavy metal riff. If I put that on Reb's guitar, it would be like... So that's that is what I was trying to do.
See, I was thinking some of those sections, to me, they feel so physical. I could practically see Nijinsky or some dancer kind of striding across a stage. Do you see dance when you're, like, especially if you're writing those pieces?
Yes. I literally get up in my studio and dance around and do some moves. I'm terrible now. That's how I feel the music and I see it when I write it.
Is that part of the connection to heavy metal? Because heavy metal, you know, it's a rock music that you can feel all the way into your body. Maybe it all is, but I think of heavy metal especially as being very physical.
As you're speaking, I'm hearing a piece of music that wants to be written from what you're saying, because the energy and the feeling of a electric guitar through a Marshall amp is this visceral thing that just hits you at a primal level, and it's very challenging to put that in an orchestra piece. And I totally lost my train of thought when you were talking, because I heard this thing happening that I missed.
You know what I love about what you're saying is you're not putting down rock music. You're not saying, yeah, well, that's the simple art form and orchestral is the highest form of music.
No, rock music is amazing, and it reaches so many people, rock and pop. I mean, I'm not prejudiced against any kind of music.
So as long as we referenced the Beavis and Butthead thing, there was a period of time when grunge was coming in, and suddenly the look you guys had was going out fast. So that Beavis and Butthead made fun of you. Metallica, they threw darts at your poster,
right,
or
right.
Something. So I would imagine that there might have been a period of time when it hurt or was embarrassing to look back.
I never felt embarrassed of our band. I've got incredible musicians in my band. And what we were doing was a symptom of the time. So the problem was we came late. So then grunge came and wiped it all out. And it did hit me personally. There was a point where I basically didn't have enough self-esteem to walk on stage, you know. Mm-hmm. But not only that, I didn't need to walk on stage because there was no gigs. I mean, we were literally wiped off the face of the earth. Being on the radio, gone, and lost my record deal, lost my publishing. Nobody wanted to book that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just me. It was all the other bands that were like us. It was a very tough time. And for me, personally, because I had money and stuff, so it wasn't like, uh-oh, I better go get a job at McDonald's. It was like, okay, what am I going to do now? And for me, it was like, I'm going to get back to studying music, which is what I've always been in this for anyway. So ironically, the way it happened for me, it gave me the time it took to go get my music chops where I really wanted them to be. So the universe works real strange. That's not saying I didn't have a big ego about it. It was definitely tough for many years.
We heard some of your classical music. Can you, you've got instruments here.
We do. What should we play? You want to play Down Incognito or you want to do the instrumental one?
Let's do Free.
Free?
Yeah.
So in Egypt, it's kind of a long story. My first wife passed away in a car wreck in 1996 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And she was German, so I had to take her back to Germany, and we had the funeral in Berlin, and it was a very bleak time, and it was right, it was, you know, in the dark ages of what I refer to them, with my career and all that, and so everything was very sad, and I was in Berlin, and her mom said, "You need the sun, you should go to Egypt." So I bought a ticket, and I went to Egypt and landed in Cairo at 3 a.m. with nowhere to go. And it was the perfect place to go at that time because the Egyptians worship the dead. And I spent about 3 weeks. I landed at the airport, and, you know, you get accosted by everybody going, "We'll sell you this thing, this package, do this. It's 10 days in a thing and the greatest hotel and all that." And I found these three dudes. It was like $1,200 for 3 weeks or something. So I was like, okay, take me wherever you want to go, because I didn't care. I mean, I didn't care about much of anything at that point. But I used to carry a DAT player with me and record everything. And I had my guitar with me, and I did some, like, impromptu jam sessions with people on the street. And they were the most interesting groups of musicians, and I had never really been attuned to Middle Eastern scales and this kind of thing. And, you know, it's interesting because they just jam it on the streets, and it's incredible. I mean, talk about charming the snake. I mean, it's really, that's kind of where I got that term, actually. So
does music, it's music kind of, it's not just the notes, it's not just the technicality. It sounds like beyond that, there's something else that's energy.
It is. I mean, there's it's magic. It's the universal language of all of creation, in my view, and I can't tell you where it comes from. And you, and any artist would tell you that they're just, quote, taking dictation. You've heard that a million times, right? But it really is like that. So the cliches became cliches because they are true.
So when Kip was in our studio, he recorded a couple more tracks for us, including a song he played with a local high school cellist, Majestica Lohr.
A D? Can you give me a D?
Majestica, you go to school in Madison?
I go to Memorial High School.
So when did you get the call to come play with Kip Winger?
Oh, I got it last night.
Just last night?
Yeah, after I came from work, I got an email, and I was like, oh. It was actually from the band director at my school, and he's like, "Urgent cello opportunity. Please respond as soon as you can."
And is this the first time you've ever played with a famous rock musician?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. I'm just going to do the whole thing, so you know, kind of.
So here's the track of Kip and Majestica playing together, plus the second half of our conversation where we go into more detail about the music.
I am the son who believed in the call. Standing beside you, I witness it all. Walk hand in hand through cities of clay, far from the ocean, so far from the ocean. You wonder why, but don't you know someone you on my blue suede shoes. Oh, red, white, and blue suede shoes. Oh, for you. Trophy you hang on your wall, levy illusion, rob Peter, pay Paul. I brave the distance, I take the fall of extreme words unspoken with deeper devotion, free to decide. Salute the lives laid down before. suede shoes. Oh, red, white, and blue suede shoes.
That was such a gorgeous song.
Thank you.
And you're playing it with a local high school student. Is that something you do? Wherever you go, you find a local high school student to play with?
Not high school, but I try to find local musicians to play with me. But high school's great. It's even better because they, you know, they're when you get them younger, you can influence their direction in a positive way earlier. So she was really lovely.
You started playing really young yourself, though. Even younger, I think. I think I've read 7, 8.
I did. I my parents were in a jazz band and bought us musical gear at Christmas when we were very early. Actually, the first time that my dad brought home some musical instruments, it was a guitar and drums for my two older brothers because he felt like I was too young to know what I wanted to play. But it was obvious that I would play bass because then we'd have a band, which was fine because I wanted to play bass. So it all worked out.
What did you play then? Do you remember?
Yeah, so I was a 70s guy. I like 70s rock bands and pop. It was Creedence Clearwater Revival, Black Sabbath, you know, Paranoid off their first album. Grand Funk was a big influence on me. Mm. We weren't very good, though, you know, so you have to pick the ones that you can play. Like, I see a bad moon horizon. The three chord tunes, mostly. So the beginning with my brothers lasted until I was in my 20s, and we went from the elementary school gig to the junior high to the high school to the clubs. We got a big agent, and we recorded a bunch of songs, but we could never get a record deal because the famous line back then was, I don't hear a hit from the A&R guys. That was the whole mantra of...
But the irony is you wound up with like 6 top 40 hits.
We did. Well, that was later. So the chapter one was with my band, and then chapter two was moving to New York on my own. And that was pretty traumatic, actually, to leave my brothers. They were older than me, and we really had to go, okay, we're not getting anywhere. And that was, you know, when you're a little kid, we're like, we're going to make it. It's going to be amazing. And then crickets, and then not, and okay, I got
to
go.
But you moved to New York and you wound up playing bass with Alice Cooper. So was that hard with your brothers? Did they feel like, whoa, well, he made it and we didn't?
Yes, I think it was. And it would be hard for me if it had been the other way around, too. So I get it. It's human nature. Because we were, you know, we lived and died for each other in that band. And I was carrying the torch for my band with my brothers all the way through the Winger days. In the early days, you know.
So I have to say, we've referenced Alice Cooper and your band, which became really big in the late 80s, Winger, all of which seems light years away from the song you just played,
yeah.
Blue Suede Shoes.
Right. So I play a lot of military bass. I got a lot of friends in the military. I've met a lot of them, and you know, they do this sacrifice, and it's so cliche to say they sacrifice their lives and they, all the things we say about how great they are, but you never really, our government's not really putting its money where its mouth is, so to speak. So I always like to do a shout out. So when Winger reformed in 2006, I had an idea to write kind of a concept album, but mostly as a shout out to the vets.
Well, the thing that really struck me about it is there's a depth and a richness of emotion that you brought to that I don't know, I wonder if a younger singer or musician could find that.
That's an excellent question. Some people maybe when they're, there's a few artists along the way like Jeff Buckley and people like this that were able to do that at a young age. I wasn't. It took me, I'm a late bloomer.
Oh, I don't know. You bloomed pretty young, too.
On that level, though, I mean, you know, to really know what you're saying lyrically, I didn't even really come into my own until my third album. My first two albums were, back, you know, rewinding our conversation, were having that, we don't hear a hit, ingrained into me. And the desperation of feeling like, you know, if I don't get a record deal, then I'm going to have to get a regular job. Oh, my God. Driven by the fear of not knowing what else to do. So my third album, I caught my stride and then started, you know, understanding what is a good lyric and why, basically.
Okay. Got one more for us?
Okay, so this song was really an interesting song because when the whole thing crashed down with the 80s, we still were signed to Atlantic Records, and I had to come up with a hit song for, you know, coming back. But I knew that it was impossible because the grunge thing was in full force and Nirvana had taken over the world. And so, you know, we named the album Pull because we knew everybody was just, when our album came out, everybody in the world was going to go, Pull! Like skeet shooting, and this song Down Incognito was my reaction to kind of how it was all going at that time, so yeah, here it goes.
Days undercover, all out of sync, haven't paid the rent, even talking in my sleep. My monkey's MO is all out of commission, waiting for a good old-fashioned cure for my condition. 'Cause I'm all out of charm and I'm all out of money, hanging down incognito, waiting for the sun to shine.
So much fun. Thank you so much.
Kip Winger is busy making all kinds of music today. He tours with his old band. They just did two sold-out concerts in Japan. He also plays acoustically. That was him in our studio with jazz musician Ben Hans. And let's close with the last track, from his new classical CD. This is the track called A Parting Grace. Thanks for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe heard something worth sharing. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to audio engineer Joe Harkey for recording our Kip Winger session. Our producers are Charles Monroe Kane, Raymond Tungekar, Doug Gordon, Craig Ely, and John Merfeld. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer, and I'm Ann Strainchamps. We'll be back next week.
PRI, Public Radio International.